Welcome to the I Create Daily podcast. I'm Leora Alderson.
And I'm Devani Alderson. We're your co-hosts on this journey of creativity and productivity.
I Create Daily is for artists in every genre of creating, from musicians to writers, crafters to inventors, bloggers to entrepreneurs. I Create Daily is a movement for creators serious about your art.
If you're into creating anything, this podcast is definitely for you. Thank you so much for joining us on this journey. Hello and welcome to another episode of the I Create Daily podcast. I'm Devani.
And I'm Leora.
And this is a movement for creators serious about their art, which I meant to say a minute ago.
I'm glad you remembered to say that. Okay, and you're still Devani.
Yes, I'm still Devani.
And I'm still Leora. And our guest today is Angela Langlotz. She is a trademark and copyright attorney serving and educating clients in brand development, trademarks, and copyright. Angela helps online and bricks and mortar businesses protect their valuable brand identities and loves educating business leaders on copyright law through her extensive, informative, and entertaining video library on her website, trademarkdoctor.net. When not practicing trademark and copyright law, Angela enjoys cooking Italian and Spanish food, drinking wine, running, yoga, traveling, and hiking. Welcome, Angela.
Well, thank you so much. I feel so very welcomed.
Well, you're beautiful and you're not the typical stuffy attorney, and we're going to talk, look, and we're loving that, and we're going to talk about that because we started talking before we started recording, and then we thought we've got to stop talking and we just need to start the show.
Yes. So why don't we take it from the beginning of your story of how you got into law and how you decided to focus specifically on trademark and copyright law.
Okay, sure. Well, I got into law because I decided that I didn't want to go to medical school. I actually have an undergraduate degree in biochemistry and microbiology with a minor in Latin American studies. And I decided that medicine seemed like it was going to be a real grind where there wasn't really an opportunity for me to be creative. And so I decided to go to law school instead. And that's turned out to be a really, really great career choice for me, and one that's afforded me a lot of freedom in how I practice and a lot of room to think outside the box. Mm-hmm. So when I first started my law practice, I mainly focused on business law and wealth transfers for business owners and other wealthy families. And this is going to sound super flaky, but I'm just going to say it anyway. I really got tired of showing up in the office every day and putting on what I like to call the lawyer suit, right? So I had to drive 45 minutes each way to the office. I had to show up. I had to put on the lawyer suit. And I got to tell you, it was just killing me. So I was married at the time. I've been divorced for about 6.5 years now. But I was married at the time, and my husband, who was a patent attorney, said, listen, he was working at home and really enjoyed it. He said, listen, why don't you come home and, you know, work from home, and you can run the trademark practice. So, my specialty, don't hate, was the firearms industry, okay? I know that seems really weird, but that is the practice niche that we chose, and we were wildly successful. And for for a number of years, I was filing about 40% of the trademarks that got filed in International Class 13. And International Class 13 is basically things that blow up, right? So firearms, ammunition, fireworks. Yeah. So I was filing just me, my little practice was filing.
So it was
filing.
A more explosive job than your
right. It was an explosive job choice. But anyway, so when I divorced, I basically gave him the law practice and started serving entrepreneurs, both, online and brick and mortar. And I had been selling stuff online for a while, for a number of years. So I knew about the particular challenges that online business owners have. And I got quite a reputation in the online business community for kind of being the go-to trademark attorney. And here I am.
Wow. Fantastic. So, and I'm glad you said that about the lawyer suit, because prior to that, you know, I indicated, you know, the stuffy corporator, and I don't mean to degrade that at all, because some people love that and mm-hmm. it works for them. Most people in our audience are creatives, which means they're artists, musicians, writers, but we also have entrepreneurs, inventors, people who create products and product developers. So mm-hmm. anyone creating something, but most of the things that most of what they have in common is they're working on their own, which means they don't yeah. have to show up to a corporation that has its dress code, you know, that mm-hmm. you have to, and most of us love that, you know, so yeah.
And I don't even think it's necessarily the clothing that we don't like. It's just everything that represents somebody else telling me how to live a majority of my work life.
yeah. yeah. I mean, I hear you there. I've been a solo practitioner since 2013, so quite a while now. And I just really hated going to an office and having somebody else control my work environment, right? I mean, I was working at a law office once, and they had this really obnoxious intern. His desk was kind of in this vestibule slash hallway right outside my office. And he would come to work when I'm, you know, I'm trying to like draft documents and talk to clients. And he would come to work and play really obnoxious music, not on his headphones, but because he thought the rest of the office needed to hear it too, you know, on his computer speakers. And I basically just told the supervising attorney, listen, here's the deal. Either he stops doing it or I leave, you know, and that's just the way it is, because I can't work under these circumstances. So, you know, I mean, that whole situation just basically got intolerable for me. So I just said, you know, see you later. Bye. I'm out of here, and started my own practice.
He was fantastic. Sorry to interrupt you. So
no, it's fine.
So he was doing his creative thing, but it just wasn't the creative thing for everybody, right?
right. No, I mean, hey, do your creative thing. Let your freak flag fly, just not outside my office.
Right? Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And now you have your own. So I'm sure, like, you know more than we do for sure what kind of questions you get asked most often by people who are trying to you know, to protect their work, as well as concern that they might be infringing on somebody else's. And so we have several angles we would like to expand on with you today. So the first was how you got to become a creative yourself and doing your own thing, entrepreneur, working for yourself. And so we've touched on that. And mm-hmm. so then I think next, what our audience would need to know most is what they can do to protect their work. So here's an example of some things that have come up in our community, our Facebook community group. Mm-hmm. We have a number of people who are writers. Like I said, we have one person who is a musician and composer of music, as well as singer. You're probably familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk. So the culture of today is produce lots and copy of content, document it, and put it out there all the time as much mm-hmm. as you can. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where we could start. It's like, what are the concerns? It's so different, right? Your industry would seem to be so different. And I would imagine as an entrepreneur, you've had to look at it with a different perspective than it might be looked at in corporate law. So could you take over here and just share your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the big mistake that I see most people make when they create something is that they don't go and look and see what else is being used out there. You know, what else is being registered. So one of the biggest problems that people have is that they adopt names for their businesses, or they adopt names for their products or other brand names, and they don't bother to check and see if those brands are already registered. Right? Because if somebody else is already using it for similar goods, you can't use it. It's trademark infringement, right? So there's that. Another issue that I see a lot of is, and you know, the internet makes it so easy to copy other people's stuff. I see a lot of people getting into trouble copying other people's stuff, especially photographs, off of the internet. And I mean, the problem is that it's, like I said, it's so easy. Mm-hmm. And it's, I like to say that copyright infringement is kind of like speeding, right? So when the cop pulls you over and says, madam, do you know how fast you were going?
Yeah.
Which you should never answer the cops questions, just smile, right? they don't write you a ticket if you intended to speed, right? Intent is not part of the inquiry. The officer goes, the speed limit is 25, you were going 40, and I'm writing you up for going 15 over, here's your ticket. Same thing with copyright infringement. You copied my original work, and here's your demand letter for damages. Thank you very much, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter if you intended to copy. It doesn't matter if you only copied like part of it. It doesn't matter, right? I mean, there are certain like circumstances under which you can copy, but that's without this conversation right now, okay? So don't copy other people's stuff. You will get into trouble for doing that. And the damages can be big, especially if the copyright is registered, the registrant, the copyright owner gets statutory damages, okay? And they don't have to prove anything to get damages if the copyright is registered. So you could be on the hook for, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of damages. So
there's, even if you that raises an interesting question. So there's a lot of like artists that put their work out on Instagram or, you know, Facebook or wherever, online,
YouTube.
Online. And that's a huge volume of content being put out. How does one determine this is, so I know that there's like the basic sort of Creative Commons law where if you make it and you put it out there, it's yours based on the fact that you made it. And so where it seems like some of the lines blur a little bit when you get into the amount of volume being put out by various creators online, and you're obviously going to run into, so like if an artist draws a unicorn and puts it out online and somebody else draws something and it looks remotely similar and neither of them have an idea that the other exists, like where are some of those lines drawn and how does one protect their work in that environment? If does that make sense? I'm not even sure if I'm asking the right question.
Yeah. There is so much wiggle room in copyright law. So that's kind of a multi-part question. So let me break it down. I heard one of your questions was, when I upload my content, my creative work to someplace like YouTube or Instagram or Facebook, what rights do I have to that content? Is that your question?
That's one of them, yeah, for sure.
Okay. So we'll get to the other ones later. One question at a time.
Yeah.
So you have to really look at the terms of service, right? So like for YouTube, for example, when you upload something to YouTube, as part of the terms of service, they require that you're granting YouTube a non-exclusive worldwide, perpetual license to redistribute that content and monetize it however they like. That doesn't mean that you still don't own it, okay? That doesn't mean that other people have a right to copy it. It just means that YouTube has the right. You've given them a license, all right? Think of copyright rights, your rights as a creator, as kind of a bundle of sticks, right? Mm-hmm. So you have this bundle of rights that you can give away. And when you license something, it's kind of like giving away a stick, right? So you can give away that stick, and if, you know, under certain terms, that's what a license is. You're basically giving somebody the right to use your content for a limited purpose. That's a license. And if you want to, you can do that. And if you want to retain all your rights, you can do that. But you better make sure, if you want to put your content out there on a platform that you don't own, you are granting that platform the right to use your content in a certain way. That's the only way you can get it on to their platform, right? I mean, you're basically giving them the right to reproduce that or redistribute that for a certain time. You have to go and read the terms of service, right? So I just talked about what YouTube's terms of service are. That doesn't mean that YouTube has the right to sell it. Well, I mean, are they selling it to other people? Kind of. They're selling advertising. But that doesn't mean that anybody else has the right to copy your stuff, right? I really think that everybody, if you want to, you know, retain the rights to your stuff, one of the things that you should do is put a watermark on it, right? If you put a watermark on it, even if somebody else shares it, they're not going to be able to pass it off as yours. Or if they try to, it's got your watermark on it, right?
Right.
So all of the YouTube videos that I produce and the Facebook Lives that I produce, they all have a lower third on them, has my name, has my website on it, has my logo on it, says that it's live video on it. I mean, if you wanted to chop that up and make it look really funny, I guess you could take all those things out. But, you know, it would be difficult and a lot of trouble. And that's kind of the point. You want to make it difficult for people to steal your content and pass it off as their own. And watermarking it makes it very difficult for them to do that. So I recommend certainly that everybody put a logo of some sort on their material so that when it's downloaded, if it's downloaded or reshared or re-uploaded someplace else, at least they can't pass it off as yours. Now, arguably, if they download it and then republish it someplace else, is that copyright infringement? Yes, it could very well be. Oh, wow. So
like people who screenshot a photo from Instagram and then post it to their account again. I know a lot of people who do that. We've done it with our account, but is it different if you're actually sharing it with the intent of giving credit to everybody?
Well, giving credit's very altruistic, but I mean, again, you have to go to the terms of service, but absent any other term of service, I would say if you're reproducing somebody else's work and uploading it to your account, that could be copyright infringement, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and like I said, it's so easy, and we have this kind of online culture of sharing material online, right? Mm-hmm. And for the purpose of, you know, maybe educating or illustrating, arguably that would all be covered under the fair use exception under copyright law. But I don't think that most people, when they share content, are really trying to steal from the original creator.
Right.
And if the content has my watermark on it, guess what? I'm probably not going to care that that it's being shared, because it reflects on me, right? It's already marked with my brand. So if people like it and they think it's cool, guess who they're going to go see?
Right. Definitely.
Me.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So that's okay.
Yeah. It's definitely an asset in that regard.
But you can see why there's like so many intricate and complicated issues around it, because there's so many nuances to what's copywritten. What levels of infringement have you broken, basically? And so it's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there is actually a lot of nuance to copyright law. I mean, it's a lot less cut and dried than people think, right? Like even this whole fair use exception, that's an issue that's been litigated a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some factors that go into it. But, you know, when you get into questions of, you know, what's fair use, it's really wiggly. You know, it's really wiggly, and you got to be really careful. And there's no like straight answer. It's just like, well, if it's, you know, X, Y, and Z, then it's probably fair use. But if there's too much profit being made off of somebody else's stuff, then it may not, you know, it's just, it's very wiggly. The whole thing is very wiggly.
Well, I remember the first time I originally kind of realized that this whole copyright thing was a wider spread issue than a lot of people talk about in the creative community was several years ago. And I think actually a couple times since, Snapchat got in trouble because they have filters. When you take a selfie or a video or a photo, you can, you know, overlay filters, and their team or their developers create these, you know, weird different things.
Yes.
And they have gotten in trouble several times for creating filters that, copy other artists, or especially makeup artists, because a lot of it's face filters. And so I think it's interesting that, because on one hand you're like, well, is there proof that they actually saw that this person, this artist, you know, did this thing? Or was it just happenstance that the creative filter person decided, oh, this looks cool, and then that makeup artist said, hey, I posted this, and it looks exactly like my makeup design from, you know, way back when. So how does that work?
You know, like I said, it's all very wiggly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's hard to say, like, you know how our minds work, right? So we, and sometimes it's like deja vu, right? So you'll see something or be in a situation and it seems like you've been there before. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though maybe you weren't there before. But I mean, part of the problem is that you can hear something and then create something later that sounds a lot like it because you don't remember that you heard it, right? Yeah. For example, there was a copyright claim against, it was George Harrison. So there was this song and it was My Sweet Lord. My sweet Lord, hallelujah. Remember that one? My sweet Lord. Okay, well, he was sued for copyright infringement by, I think it was the Shirelles, okay? Because they alleged that his chord progression was a lot like their, he's so fine, shoo-lang, 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 shoo-lang. That, remember that song? Okay, that was a real thing. Sorry about the singing.
No, you're great.
Podcast peeps, sorry. Anyway, I bet you I'm the only guest that has sung on your podcast.
So far. Yeah. And you're going to have some singers, so we might have to shake. So you're adding a wonderful extra dimension.
There you go. But anyway, they sued him for copyright infringement. I forget what the outcome was. I think they won because they alleged that he had copied it and it did sound an awful lot like it, you know, like it was copied, and they were able to convince a jury that actually, you know, he copied it. Now, did he really copy it? Well, I don't know. You know, he was a musician. So there's a lot of factors that go into this. Did he have access to it beforehand? Would he have been exposed to it? Well, probably, because he was a musician, right? And this song came out during his lifetime. And, you know, he probably would have heard it. And, you know, all this stuff is going to go to the jury. And the jury's going to evaluate all this stuff. And that's how they make a decision. And unfortunately, you know, like, so like with the makeup artist thing, well, would the podcast, not the podcast, would the Snapchat peeps who were making the filter, would they have had access to that, you know, protected work?
Probably.
Maybe. I don't know. Would they have seen it? Maybe. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? So it's just one of those.
They're probably surfing, like, the internet for ideas to spark, you know, whatever thing. So it probably was one of those situations where somebody, because as a creative person, like, we are always on the lookout for creative ideas. Everything we see, we're like, oh, that's really cool. And like you were saying, we might forget that we saw something and it triggered that idea.
Exactly. And, you know, like, everybody's got a swipe file. Don't you have a swipe file?
Yeah.
Okay, for people who don't know, when you write copy, and I don't mean copyright, when I mean like write sales copy, you have what's called a swipe file. Mm-hmm. A swipe file of, you know, other people's ideas or other people's writing that you liked, or you liked the way they laid something out, or you liked the way they made a certain point. And just because you use somebody else's like framework doesn't mean that you are copying them if it's in your own words, right? So I think people also get really hung up on, oh, well, you can't use that phrase because I've been using the phrase. Well, we know that phrases can't be copyrighted, okay? These little chunks, like Paris Hilton a few years ago, she was trying to assert some kind of ownership over the phrase, that's hot. That's hot. I guess that was her thing. That's hot, right? And maybe you can register a trademark for that's hot, for whatever, you know, for that. But you can't copyright that because it's not big enough. It's not creative enough. It's not a work of creative expression just going around saying, that's hot.
It's just beautiful slang that everybody says at some point.
Exactly. Exactly. You cannot stop me from saying that's hot.
Right.
Right. I'm making stuff up over here. I don't know if that's what she said. I'm just imagining Paris Hilton going around saying that's hot.
Yeah. I mean, you can picture it. It goes with the image.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Right. She's got the dog. She's got the dog and the pink whatever. And she's going around saying that's hot.
So how does something like that connect with Nike's Just Do It?
Oh, okay. All right. So that's a trademark, right? So people get confused about patents and trademarks and copyrights. So let's talk about the difference. The difference, okay. So what's a patent? A patent is when you have a patent, you have the exclusive right for 20 years from the date of filing to make, use, or sell a novel, useful, and non-obvious invention, okay? So novel, new, right? Useful, has to be useful, non-obvious, meaning it can't be obvious to the person down the street to put, you know, X and Y and Z together and make X, Y, Z, right? So that's a patent. So if it's useful, it's protected by patent law. If it is a creative work reduced to a tangible medium, that is protected by copyright. So copyright protects any work, any creative work reduced to a tangible medium. And it is protected the moment it is reduced to a tangible medium. Now notice that it has to be tangible, okay? You have to be able to experience it with one of your five senses. I almost said sentences. One of your five senses. If you can't experience it with one of your five senses, it is not capable of copyright protection. You don't have to register it in order to have rights to your creative work, okay? You just have to reduce it to a tangible medium. So, what are some examples of things that are covered by copyright law? Photographs, poetry, novels or any literary work, any art like sculpture or painting. If you arrange lights in an artistic way on the Eiffel Tower, the arrangement of those lights is protected by copyright law. No kidding. If you take a picture of the Eiffel Tower at night when the lights are on, you're violating the creator's copyright. I wish I were joking. I am not. What else is covered?
Makes you think again about taking a picture of the Eiffel Tower at night.
I know, right? But it's true. What else is covered? I mean, music is covered. Derivative works are also covered. So if you paint a painting and I take a picture of it, I have reproduced the work photographically and I'm guilty of copyright infringement. All right. If somebody paints a mural on a wall and it's public and I take a picture of it and I put it on t-shirts and I sell it, that's copyright infringement. Okay. So, you know, if you write a novel in Spanish and I translate it to English, without paying you or getting your permission or licensing that from you, I've done copyright infringement because that is a derivative work, okay? So that's copyright. Anything creative. Trademarks. What's a trademark? A trademark is a source identifier. A trademark exists.
Angela, let me just interrupt
yes.
you for a second if I could to clarify on copyright before we get yes. far into trademark and trademark questions. So, as a creator, are you automatically protected even if you don't write copyright at the bottom just because you created it? Do you have to actually file with the copyright office, etc.?
Those are very good questions. Your work is automatically copyrighted the moment you reduce it to a tangible medium. You don't have to put the circle C on it and you don't have to register it.
Right.
This is why people inadvertently violate other people's copyrights all the time, right? They think, oh, well, if it doesn't have the circle C on it, then it's not copywritten. Well, no, it's somebody else's work. And if it doesn't have a Creative Commons license on it, then don't copy it. it might be, you might be able, like if you go to YouTube, I'm not sorry, not YouTube, scratch that. If you go to Google and you search their images, and you go to the far right, there's a little drop-down menu, and if you're looking at images, you can actually pick images that are usable under the Creative Commons license, right? And then there are other images that are usable for non-commercial purposes. And then there are other images that are usable for non-commercial purposes if you alter them, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of different types of rights that people have granted to reuse their work. And you need to make sure that you know what that is. Now, if you want to be super sure that you are not committing copyright infringement, then, you know, go pay for the images at Getty Photos or something like that. What was the other part of your question? Oh, damages. So what do you get when you register it? When you register your work, you have the right to get statutory damages for copyright infringement. You don't have to prove your damages. If you don't have a registration, then you do have to prove your damages. You would have to prove that, you know, Joe over here copied your image and you know, you regularly sell your photographs for $5.95 on, you know, whatever website. And because Joe sold 100 of your photographs, they were on t-shirts, right? He sold t-shirts for $12.95. You're going to allege that for every t-shirt Joe sold, he owes you the value of your, you know, your creation that was on it, right? So he owes you a license fee for that. And, you know, if you register your copyright, you can also get, you know, punitive damages for, you know, extraordinary acts of infringement and all of that. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you get when you register. It basically means that you don't, there's a whole bunch of stuff you don't have to prove. And proof is expensive when you try to do it, legally speaking. So it's not very expensive to register a copyright. It's like $40. So, you know, you might just as well do it if you have something that it that is really valuable to you, you know.
But how much would you have to register? So let's say that you're an artist, you're a prolific artist, and we have mm-hmm. in our community who created just this morning 4 new works of art. So, you know, like if she wanted to start selling them online or displaying them in museums, wherever, you can't copyright every single one, and yet everyone is unique. So how do you do that?
You know, you can copyright some stuff in batches, right? And like things like blogs. I mean, there's some stuff that the copyright law doesn't really contemplate, right? Like try to get a copyright for your blog. Well, you can only register stuff it's basically like taking a snapshot at a point in time and saying, this is all registered. So you have to like keep registering the new stuff, and you can register stuff in batches. Like say for example that you're a photographer and you create a bunch of photos, right? You can register stuff in batches, because imagine, good Lord, paying $40 per photo, right, to register it. So I mean, there's kind of different ways to register different stuff, but you can register it in batches.
Okay.
Like all your blog content is a batch, you know?
Someone violates your work of art and you need to take action. If you have already filed copyright, then you just submit, there's probably a place to submit that infringement on the copyright side, I'm guessing, correct?
You sue them in federal court for copyright infringement.
So, but the course of action is, you said that they didn't need to prove it. So how do they bring that action against somebody?
No. What I mean is you are presumed to have certain rights, right? When I say you don't have to prove it, it just means that like when you go into court, when I've registered something with the copyright office, I don't have to prove when I created it. Right. Okay. Because I already told you that when I registered the copyright, I don't have to prove that I was the creator, because I already told you that when I registered the copyright. I don't have to prove that this exact thing is my work, because I already submitted that when I registered the copyright. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So when I say that there's a whole bunch of stuff you don't have to prove, I mean that you don't have to prove all that. It's already presumed because it's in the record already. Okay. It's in the record that I own this, because, you know, that I created it, and I created it on this date, and that I'm the real owner, because I already filed the copyright. So I don't have to prove all of that stuff in a court of law. It's presumed. It's already part of the public record. So we can just like skip all that. And, you know, go to the juicy stuff, like how much do I get paid because Joe infringed my copyright? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So not only that, but how much does it cost me in federal court to, you know, file the claim of copyright infringement? How long the court process approximately? I know everyone is different. So yeah. Just ballpark. And like, perhaps there's a case you've already done that you could just like kind of give the generalities of it. Because part of the deal too, it's like, and as entrepreneurs and product developers, we've been round and around this ourselves since the concept that, okay, we could file, but then if somebody actually infringed on our rights or even our trademark, then we would have to take them to court. Would we be willing to take the time and money necessary to do that? So if you could speak to that.
I mean, that's up to you, and it depends on what lawyer you hire. I mean, everybody bills differently, and, you know, you're going to have to take them to federal court, and that's not cheap. Usually, you send them a demand letter first and say, listen, you know, you can either pay me this, or I'm going to go into court, and I'm going to ask for that, and then more, and then more, and then more, and I'm going to ask that you pay my attorney's fees, you know, and here's my copyright, here's the registration, here's the number. And, you know, it makes them take their feet off the table.
Yeah.
And, you know, usually you'll get a call from their attorney going, let's talk, let's settle this, you know, because they don't want to go to court.
Right.
God, why would you, you know, when I've already laid it out for you, you know, and I've negotiated on the client side, those sorts of cases. And, you know, I've been able to negotiate with opposing counsel. One of the cases that I remember most vividly was a guy, he owned a business, and one of his employees, for the company Christmas party, not kidding, took a very nice photograph of snowy Lake Tahoe off of the internet. It didn't have the circle C on it, in her defense, but she should have known better anyway. She didn't know any better. And I think the demand was for $20,000, and I ended up settling the case for my client for about two. Because I basically said to opposing counsel, look, this was my client's bonehead employee. She really didn't know, and it was for the company. Christmas party. Okay. Yeah. The invitation, it wasn't for commercial purposes. And they were like, yeah, fine. Okay. So we settled for a couple thousand dollars, but you know, it cost them a couple thousand dollars to resolve
it. Right. Wow. So. Okay. Yeah. There's so many ins and outs, and I want to.
That's why we're so glad we have people like you who know the ins and outs, because learning all that for a creative is just sort of like you start learning it and you get down that rabbit hole. And at first you're like, this is so, so interesting. And then you're like, there's so many scenarios and so many ways to go that I could literally spend my entire life and never make another painting because I'm still learning on how to protect myself.
It's crazy. And, you know, people think that this area of the law is, you know, easy. It's like, oh, you just apply, you just file a trademark application. It's like, yeah, filing the application is the easy part. Okay.
Right.
You know, there's a whole analysis that happens before that.
Yeah. So you mentioned trademarks. So now I stopped you earlier in continuing with the explanation on the trademark and the distinctions and such. So pick up.
Yes. So a trademark is a source identifier, right? So for example, if I see this, can you see it?
The Xbox.
Okay. It's the wrong way. Can you read it or is it a mirror image?
It's a Kleenex. Yeah.
Is it backward?
No,
it's not. It's good.
Oh, it's not backward. Okay, that's cool. Anyway, when I see Kleenex, I know that, you know, this box of tissues was made by, is it Procter & Gamble that owns Kleenex?
I think so, yeah. Something like
I'm not
that.
Sure. Anyway, whoever owns Kleenex made these, right? When I see... I'm trying to find something with a brand on it. I don't have anything. When I see the swoosh, I know that the swoosh, and I know that was made by Nike, right? So for me, Nike shoes, like that Yeti blue, right? Like I know that is a blue brand microphone, and Yeti is one of their models. I'm sure that they have a trademark for that, but I know that microphone is going to work really well for me because other people have used it, right? When I buy a Nike shoe, when I see that shoe, I go to myself, no, I know if I buy that shoe, I know their heel counters are really wide and I'm going to be fighting that the whole time I wear it. So I'm going to buy the 3-stripe. Oh, that was 4. Sorry. I'm going to buy the 3-stripe shoe instead, right? I'm going to buy the Adidas shoe because I know that Adidas shoes have certain characteristics because of the way Adidas makes their shoes. So the brand, the trademark, is just a source identifier. It tells me where that product or service came from, right? So I know there are certain things that I get when I buy something that has that mark on it. Like when I know, when I see the blue box and it's small, what am I getting? Anyone?
The blue box on the mic, you mean?
No, no. If I'm getting something small in a blue box and a white ribbon, what is it?
White ribbon, small blue box. Oh, gosh.
You got to tell us, we're not a small blue box, blue, white, what, blue box?
Robin's egg blue box, small, with a white ribbon.
Tiffany's, right?
Thank you. There you go. So do you see how powerful
I've never gotten Tiffany's.
There you go. You see how powerful these brand identifiers are. Yeah. Tiffany blue with the white ribbon. I know I'm getting a really great piece of jewelry that says Tiffany on it, right? Yeah. So yeah, so
what
brands
are like Robin blue. Because I was thinking, because I'm online so much, I was thinking Dropbox.
No, not that blue, the Robin's egg blue. Yeah. So, and a trademark can be anything. It can be a shape, like the shape of a Coca-Cola bottle. That is registered as a trademark, right? It can be a color, like John Deere has the color green registered for tractors.
Wow.
It can be, oh, Owens Corning pink fiberglass insulation. The pink, that is a registered trademark of Owens Corning. Nobody else can make pink insulation, right?
Oh, wow.
You know those big green eggs, those big green egg barbecues? Big green egg actually has a registered trademark for the color green for barbecues. Nobody else can make a green ceramic barbecue. You've got to make it some other color. You can make it blue, you can make it yellow, you can make it pink, but you can't make it green because that's a registered trademark owned by Big Green Egg. You can make a slogan a trademark, you know, like L'Oreal's Just Do It. I'm sorry, You're Worth It. Nike's Just Do It. I'm getting them all mixed up. What else is a great slogan? What else? Help me out.
Yeah, I'm kind of FedEx. See FedEx, and you.
Oh, the world on time.
The world on time.
Yeah. The world on time. That's a registered trademark of Federal Express.
Friendly skies.
It can be a logo, right? Like think about the Tony the Tiger logo. That is a registered trademark of Kellogg Foods. What else?
Oh, the Nat Geo, the just square rectangle of the National Geographic.
Yep, you can register that as a trademark too. Like this logo on my blue Yeti, like look at your microphone. Do you see that circle? It says blue. I'm sure that they have that registered. Yep.
You're watching the video. I'm holding it up, guys.
Yep, I'm sure that's registered as a trademark.
Now, Angela, if it is, my understanding is that, so back to the blue box, the blue Tiffany box that you mentioned.
Yep.
No one could do that blue box in the industries that Tiffany sells in.
But well, let's assume that it's registered. I don't know that it is or not. Right. The point that I was making is that people associate these source identifiers very readily.
Sure.
Right?
Let's say that was trademarked to Tiffany.
Yes.
Now,
okay.
Somebody could, you know, let's say a paper company could ostensibly ship their paper in an identical blue box, just maybe the different size to the paper. They could actually trademark it for that different category of industry, correct?
Okay. So Tiffany is, for your question, is kind of a bad example because it's a famous mark, right? So anytime you have a famous mark and somebody else uses that famous mark for other things, the brand owner, the trademark owner will allege that your use, even though it's not in competing goods necessarily, it dilutes their mark. Okay. So there's this thing for famous brands called dilution. And that means basically that you are taking their, you've adopted the Tiffany blue only because it's so famous, right? And now you're applying it to your goods and it's diluting the value of their famous mark. So let's use another mark that's not that famous. Okay, let's say that you have a mark, Abracadabra. I'm just making this up. Okay, let's say you have a mark called Abracadabra for video production, right? You have a video production studio and you have franchises in a couple of different states and it's Abracadabra, Circle R, video production. And then somebody else wants to come out with a cleaning product that just cleans everything. I mean, it cleans everything. It's like magic, man. And they want to call it Abracadabra. Infringing? No. Completely different goods, completely different services, not complementary at all, right? Like you would never use Abracadabra cleaning solution, cleaning solvent, whatever you want to call it, with video. It's two totally different things. This is why, for example, we can have United Airlines, right, which sells passenger service on airlines, and United Van Lines, which moves household goods all around the country, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why those two marks can coexist, because the consumer who looks at those isn't going to say, gee, I wonder if the same people who are providing this airline service are also providing this moving your household goods service. Yeah. Right?
Right.
But if you're used to seeing the Tiffany blue box, right, you might go, okay, well, Tiffany produces jewelry. They produce handbags. They do. They produce stationery, right? They produce writing instruments like pens. They must have gotten into copy paper. They must have gotten into office supplies, and I didn't even know it, right? Ooh, Tiffany blue. But you see what I mean, right?
Sure. Right. It was even using the Nike swoop for a furniture. It's
right?
Like it's too obvious that that's obviously a brand and logo and trademark specifically for Nike. And so anybody seeing it on anything besides the Nike company is just going to be like, you're a cop. Why?
Yeah.
You're really right. Shooting yourself in the foot.
Well, yes. Har har. I'm sure you didn't mean that to be ironic, but it is. Yeah. So, so anytime you have a famous mark, gosh, just stay away from it, right? Don't go using famous marks or anything that even approaches the famous mark, because I can guarantee you, you're going to get a letter from a really big law firm, right? Or from Nike's corporate counsel, and they're going to say, tisk tisk. Yeah. No. Cease and desist immediately, right?
You know what? That reminds me, I remember back when I do freelance marketing for smaller businesses, and I remember hearing about how if a YouTube person had a logo shirt on, and I remember specifically Coca-Cola went after this, but people wearing like Coca-Cola shirts in whatever random video they were creating is like they just happened to have a Coca-Cola shirt on, and it was totally unrelated to whatever they were talking about. It was just they're creating a video, they have it on. They were like requiring people to blur out the Coca-Cola logo in their marketing. Is that under any of the copyright law stuff you do, or is that just brand, some different form of legal
infringement
or anything?
And this okay. So with famous marks, when you've got a famous mark, you really are vigilant about protecting your brand image, right? Like, say, for example, the guy was wearing a Coca-Cola shirt and he was doing a video that was like saying really deprecative things about women, right? Like super misogynistic stuff. If I were Coca-Cola, I do not want my brand associated with that, right? And I would write him and tell him, you know, either take it down or blur out our name because we do not want to be associated with that. Like, just forget it. Right. Mm-hmm. Same deal. If, you know, someone is, you know, saying racist stuff, right? Like, you don't want your brand associated with that. You know, someone's wearing a Louis Vuitton, you know, whatever. Does Louis Vuitton make jewelry? Anyway, Gucci, right? You're wearing this beautiful Gucci and it's got the logo all over it and it's prominently displayed and you're spewing a bunch of, you know, nasty stuff that's, you know, racist or misogynist. No one's going to want their brand associated with that. Right. And so, yeah, they would be completely within their rights. It's called tarnishment, right? Where you are doing things that are tarnishing my brand. You are making me look bad. I have this very famous brand and I have really worked hard to build consumer goodwill. And here you are with your naughty mouth and your filthy mind and you're making me look bad.
Yeah.
You know, they are totally within their rights. Yes, absolutely.
So this is so interesting. And we're already longer than we said we would keep you. Do you have a little more time?
Yeah, I do. This is fun. So it's good. It's okay. I like it.
Fun for us. Very interesting. I can only imagine. It seems to me that the demand for you and your services in this industry, in this day and age, is just as would have just escalated because there, and you would have worked really, have to be working really hard to keep up because law doesn't like all the gray areas. And there are so many with this. Law prefers the black and white, right? And this, and there's not a whole lot of black and white in this. So I can only imagine how it's changed and how you're having to constantly keep up with it, kind of like a CPA having to keep up with tax law. But one of, so along those lines, the leading question to that is domain names. Whether or not, right. Whether or not they serve just the fact of having a domain name. So you have a website, you have a domain name, and then you, but you haven't copyrighted, you haven't trademarked it rather. It's automatically copyrighted by having it. Does that protect you having it without trademarking it? So what are the ins and outs of, because I know that there's a lot of thought these days that it's not as important to trademark things when it's so obvious that, that it belongs to you, that it's there, that it's live, that it's alive and well, you know, that you've been building it all along.
I'm sorry, the end of that broke up a little bit.
Sorry. So the question is, let's say that, so if you have a website and you have a certain domain name, it's a great domain name and you haven't trademarked it, because it's obviously your site, you own the domain name, you're running it as a site, as your blog, whatever. So then, like, do you still need to trademark it? Because you have some copyright protection by virtue of it addressing the 5 cents law of copywriting, right? Mm-hmm. So then what else? You know, what can you tell us about that?
Okay, so there are some issues where there are a lot of intellectual property issues that bleed into one another, right? So you talked about copyright. So you can copyright the content. You can register the content of your blog, right, or your website, but it's already protected by copyright, right? So as soon as you put it up, it's protected. Let's talk about the whole domain name thing. So trademarks are goods specific, right? So we already talked about how we can have two Uniteds existing. We can have United Van Lines and we can have United Airlines, right? All right. So let's say that you have a blog and your blog is, we'll make stuff up. We'll use Abracadabra. My blog is abracadabra.com and I talk about magic. Right? I write a blog about magic. I have all these videos about my magic tricks, right? All that content is already protected by copyright. Do I own the trademark for Abracadabra for my blog? Arguably, yes, I have common law trademark rights, okay? For a blog about magic. If somebody else wants to get abracadabra.net, and they want to put up crazy cat videos, right? They could actually get a trademark registration for a blog about crazy cat videos, right? About pet videos, a blog about pets. It's abracadabra.com, and it's about my cat, right? It's about my cat and all the funny things that my cat does all day. And that's my blog. Okay. Though those are arguably two very different things. They're both blogs, right? But the way that the trademark goods and services are registered is that, so your blog is probably going to be under, I think it's international class 41 or 43. I don't quite remember. But we have goods divided into international classes, right? So just because you have rights under class 41 doesn't necessarily give you rights to everything in that class if the goods are really different, right? So if you run a blog about magic and I run a blog about cats, you wouldn't necessarily see, so part of the inquiry about confusingly similar, right? Because that's always the inquiry. Would the average consumer be confused if confronted by the same two items and think that they came from the same source? Well, in this case, people who do magic blogs probably are not over here doing cat blogs, right? So that's kind of the calculus that you have to go through. The other issue too is use of a domain name without more use under the trademark law, okay? Because use under the trademark law is not what we think about as use, okay? Mm. So we can go down this rabbit hole. So use is applied to goods and services that are for sale or advertised for sale in commerce, okay, interstate, okay? So it has to be interstate commerce. It can't be just in your state. It's just in your state, no go, okay? It has to be applied to the goods or services, right? So in this case, you would actually have to register. Let's say, for example, that you had, I'm abracadabra.com and I have a magic blog, right? And I have a trademark registration for a little kit that I sell on Amazon, and it has magic stuff in it, right? It has magic, like magic props in it, right? The little thing, the little handkerchief that you know, the coins, whatever, right? The bunny that comes out of the hat, all that. So I have that on Amazon.com and I sell that. And then I also have all kinds of instructional videos on how to use everything on my abracadabra.com website. Am I using, so I registered Abracadabra for my magic props, right? For, toys probably under, I don't know what toys are. I think it depends on the toy. But anyway, toys under class 9. I'm making stuff up over here. Mm-hmm. Is my use of abracadabra.com on my website use for the goods that I have the registered trademark for? No, it's not use. Because in order to have use, I have to use the trademark on the goods for which I have the registration. I don't get the right to prevent anybody else from using abracadabra on other stuff, right? That's not related. It has to be something that would be confusingly similar. A lot of trademark registrants are under the assumption that because they have a trademark registration for X, they can prevent other people from using it on Y. And that's not always true. It depends. You have to look at the goods, you know? So there's a lot of stuff that goes into this that I don't think people really appreciate.
Support that. Like, people can go on LegalZoom.com and file their own. However,
yes, they can.
And they can go directly to the USPTO and file it themselves. However,
yes, they can.
It's because it is very confusing, if they want to make sure that they're actually, all that effort and money that they're still going to expend is actually going to be protecting them, they definitely should consult with a professional directly. Is that like your experience? I mean, I know you're going to be biased toward, you know, go for the lawyer thing, but and I'm guessing that you have stories of people that you've had to help who went that route and then discovered they weren't protected.
Yep. I have tons of stories like that. Yeah. And you know, it's funny. Yes, you can go file your own registration. Okay. But the thing is, you need to do a good search first. If you don't do a search and analyze the search, you could be filing an application that will never issue, right? Because it will never issue because there's this other mark out here that you didn't know about that was confusingly similar. Maybe you saw it and you thought that it wouldn't, your mark wouldn't infringe this registered mark because your mark is not exactly similar. That is not part of the calculus. It doesn't have to be exactly similar. Maybe you saw the mark and you thought, well, it's not exactly similar and the goods aren't exactly the same, so it won't infringe. That also is not part of the calculus, okay? So people don't understand where the line is and how close they can get to other people's marks. And I do, because I've been doing this for, you know, 10 years. More than that, good Lord. Okay, I won't say. long time, right? More than 10 years. So I know where the line is and I know how close we can get to it. And I actually do a lot of counseling with my clients too. So when you pay me to, you know, work with you on your trademark registration, I'm not just saying, okay, great, thanks, I'll go file this now, you right. know? Right. I actually go in and look at the record, but before that, I talk to you. I want to find out, how are you using the mark? What's the future for this mark? Where do you see this going? You know, let's think into the future. What else do we need to think about here? Are you using it properly? How can I help you improve your use? Because a lot of people are using their marks, but they're using them the wrong way. Or they're using them, they think they're using them, but we already talked about use, right? And it doesn't mean what we think it means. It means how it's defined in the trademark law, the Lanham Act, right? So there's all this stuff that goes into it. And the value that I bring to the table is not, you know, being the ministerial person that files the trademark application. The value that I bring to the table is the advice and the counseling that I give to my clients to help them figure out, you know, where is this going in the future? And how are we using it now? And what should we be filing now? Right? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes on kind of behind the scenes that they don't know about because they've never filed a trademark application before. And I can help them not step in it, right? Sometimes my clients come to me and they hand me what I like to call the steaming pile, right? And they say, Angela, will you please register this for me? I tried to register it and I got refused, right? And then I'll go in and I'll look at the record. And sometimes they have made so many admissions to the trademark examiner and I can't help them anymore, because anytime we go and refile it, the trademark examiner who gets the new application is going to go look at the record and they're going to see that filing there, right? And they're going to say, wait a minute. Okay, so this one was refused. Same goods, same client. Oh, now they've got an attorney. Huh, well, let's go see what they filed before, you know, and they've made a bunch of admissions that are not good, right?
Yeah.
People get themselves into all kinds of trouble and you don't get your filing fee back, right? There's no do-overs. So you file it, you don't get your filing fee back. So you could stand on the front porch and light $100 bills on fire if you want to. I don't recommend that. Yeah. I recommend that you get some help. You know, if your brand matters, if your business matters, then, you know, get some legal advice.
So that makes a lot of sense. Just with the, okay, so the concept is, if you have a domain name that is a certain name and you go to create a product with that domain name, would you still recommend the trademarking of the product brand name, because that's an actual tangible product? Is that correct?
Only if you don't want other people using it. If you don't care, then don't register it. You may have to rebrand later, you know, or you may have to oppose somebody else's trademark later if they're trying to register it. That's really expensive, right? Yeah. An opposition is probably easily triple what it costs to register the trademark. So, you know, if you want to save money but spend more later, you can do that. Yeah. All right.
Prevention is definitely better if you can do it.
Oh God, yeah. Prevention is so much better than, you know, trying to cure the problem later. I worked with a client earlier this year. Actually, no, it was last year. who didn't bother to register his trademark, and the naughty infringer actually stole his brand, applied for the registration, and my client ended up having to give up his brand because he just couldn't afford to fight the guy. Wow. He was mad. He was so mad. I was like, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about this. We can fight him, or, you know, you can maybe settle with him and get him to get him to pay you a little bit, and you can go rebrand. Well, and that's what he eventually ended up doing because it was just too expensive to fight this guy. Wow. So yeah, I mean, it's actually a lot less expensive to just, you know, get some advice and register it. But a lot of people don't want to go that route. Right. And that's when I make the real money.
Right, exactly. So what would people be looking at cost-wise to do the trademark? And again, I know it depends, you know,
yeah,
on name and how many different industries you have to check and all of that. So
yeah,
like saying how much to build a house, obviously it depends on what kind of house. So what would be like the median range?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's less than $2,000 to get a trademark registration. Okay, so I really don't understand why people don't do it. I don't get it. Okay. You know, yeah. So.
All right, well, that's a tremendous help, I'm sure, to many people. And we want to shift gears back to the conversation we were having when we first started, because mm-hmm. this will help you and our audience as well. Mm-hmm. You were talking, oh, wow, look at that mug. That is amazing.
I know. I call it my big ass mug. It's about as big as my head. Do you see this?
Yeah.
It's about as big as my head. And it says, behold, I make all things new. God is a creator.
Right. Fantastic. I like that. So we were talking about, like, you were making videos, Facebook videos, Facebook Live videos regularly, I think. And we were talking, you were thinking that maybe they were too short because they tend to be on average 5 minutes and maybe too short for the podcast. And encouraged you to know, you know, package them onto a podcast platform as well as YouTube, because it gives all people who might want to find you and might need to know what you have to offer an opportunity to find you in the platforms that they most enjoy or they most habituate. So an example of that would be like you take the video from Facebook that you've created and you can repackage that and put it on a podcast platform. So that's definitely doable. Now, would you use your same website name for that? Would you, I mean, I think that would make sense, right? To name your podcast the same as your website. Did you hear that question?
Well, yeah, I did. Would I make my podcast the same as my website? Maybe, but it would depend on what other stuff I was doing, right? So, So my website is trademarkdoctor.net, even though it has stuff about copyrights and patents on it too. And the reason why, I don't know, people don't know what intellectual property is, and people don't know what the difference between a patent and a trademark and a copyright is anyway. Right. So I figure that calling it trademarkdoctor.net doesn't really make any difference if I'm talking about copyrights and patents, right?
Yeah, otherwise.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, maybe I should rebrand. I don't know. People rebrand all the time. But what would I call it? I mean, yeah, I guess I could call it the Trademark Doctor Podcast, or, you know, IP Daily. Ha, ha, ha. Get it? Right. IP.
That's great.
Yeah, I know. I'm very cheeky. So yeah, I could just see myself.
Devani,
I can just see myself doing it.
And this isn't going to air right away. So, you know, we don't want you to give away all the thoughts that you might come up with, because you may not have grabbed those names for yourself before.
And guys, it's a terrible idea to steal an idea from somebody who's in the copyright business.
Yeah, right?
Trademark business.
So that would be, let's say that you did name it the trademarkdoctor.net. Would that extend your podcast? I would imagine so, right? You own that trademark, or have I missed the lesson today?
No, you're fine. I mean, maybe I would just call it IP Daily, or I don't know.
IP Daily, we all have to, right?
Right?
Hey, very cheeky.
Yeah,
very cheeky. We definitely like the daily name, so that would be great. One of the things we were talking about earlier, we said, well, no, we need to stop, you know, and.
Well, she wears yoga pants and Uggs, so.
Yeah.
Business as usual.
Okay. So I'm glad you, so here's the thing. You were starting out saying that, you know, for being an attorney and representing law, you know, in your videos, et cetera, as well as yourself to your brand, you know, people think that an attorney should be a certain way. And so we were joking before we started recording, guys, about, you know, what we're wearing on the lower half. And so for us, right. It needs to be, you know, like shorts or skorts or whatever. And you've got yoga pants and Uggs, we've got Tevas, whatever. And so that's one of the freedom, you know, of being the entrepreneur and being able to do that. And absolutely, I think you should, as an attorney, represent yourself as you are, wherever you are, and not worry about the corporate look. Because like we were saying earlier, everybody's used to that and everybody expects that corporate look. And what's going to make them look twice, if it's something dry and legal they think they might not want to tune into, is if you're different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think you know, they say authenticity is the new currency. I have a pretty big personality, and if people don't like it, I'm totally okay with that, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm going to show up like this, you know, business on the top, party on the bottom.
What are they going to do anyway?
You know, but this is how I work. I work at home. You know, I like being able to go to the gym midday if I want to, or go for a run, or, you know, do whatever I want to do. And that's why I have the life that I have. And, you know, I like creating content for people, and I like to just show up how I am. Yeah. So, you know, I do most of the time do hair and makeup before I show up. I have shown up, I think I've shown up once without it. I don't really care, but anyway, but because, you know, video is permanent, we like to at least do a little something with the hair before we show up.
Yeah.
But you know, for me, it's just important to show up as myself, because I'm trying to attract a certain kind of client, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want clients who are like uptight and want the corporate person, because I'm not the corporate person and I'll never be the corporate person. And so if they want the corporate person, then they need to go hire somebody else.
Yeah.
Because that's not me.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. So somebody tried, this one guy tried to tell me once, I think I said something deprecative about, cereal and eating grains, right? I don't eat grains, and I think processed food is crap. And I think I said something like that, processed food is crap, on one of my videos once, because I was using Kellogg's as some example for something, but I wanted to make it really clear that I don't eat processed food because I think processed food is crap. Do you want me to say it again? Processed food is crap. And this guy actually commented on my video, and he was like, well, Angela, I don't think that you should say processed food is crap. Actually, he didn't comment on my video. He actually sent me a message, a private message, and he said, I don't think you should say processed food is crap, because what if the CEO of Kellogg's was listening and he was tempted to hire you, but then he heard you say that processed food is crap. And I was like, are you serious? Do you really think that's going to happen? Okay. So number one, it's not going to happen, right? This is some guy who like lives in his fear and sits behind a desk all day. You can tell. It's like, grow some balls, buddy, right? Grow some balls. can't believe I'm saying this on the radio, but this is how I roll. And then I was like, listen, if the CEO of Kellogg Foods isn't going to hire me because I think processed food is crap, that is okay with me, because processed food is crap, right? And I'm not going to censor myself. I am not going to censor myself, and I'm not going to be less than who I am or different than who I am, because I think it sells, or because I'm afraid to say what I think, right? It's like, well, this is me. And if you don't want to hire me, I am totally okay with that. You can go hire the stuffy processed food eating lawyer who wears a suit and a tie, you know, if you want.
Right.
That's fine with me.
No, that's excellent, because it really is about building rapport with the people that you want to work with and whom you know will want to work with you. So it makes the most sense to be who you are, and toward that, you know, and toward your creating your own videos. I'm, you know, like you like to cook Italian food and Spanish food and like you said, do yoga or run or whatever. I totally see you creating video snippets. I mean, you're talking about 5-minute video clips. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that your mind tends to work probably like ours does. And that is like when you're out doing things, when you're, whether it's cooking or running or whatever, is when you come up with a lot more ideas. So rather than making a note of it and waiting till you get back to the computer to then clean up, just go ahead in that moment. Like now I'm in the kitchen, we're cooking Spanish food, and I just saw the label on this vinegar and it brought to mind this case, etc. Now you've got a clip and it's in a setting that people will stop and watch, and it helps them get to know you mm-hmm. as well.
That's an awesome idea. Cause you know what I do? So I was out running, right? So I get ideas for content all the time. And I'm trying to find this on my phone because I want to show it to you. I was running and I saw a sign for a company called Mosquito Joe. And I don't know where you live, but here in Dallas, Texas, we have an awful problem with mosquitoes. And so people pay to have their yard treated so that you don't get eaten every time you step outside, right, in the summertime. So I took a picture of this sign that said Mosquito Joe, and it had the word mark and the logo mark and the and a slogan on it, right? And I just thought that was the best thing ever. And here it is. Here's the photo that I took. I'm going to show it to you here. It comes up. I'm going to move this so that you can see it. Oops. My phone is acting crazy. Anyway, it said...
We'll put it in the show notes. You can send us a... we'll put it in the show notes.
I mean, right now I'm just trying to get my stupid phone to respond. But anyway, I really wanted people to see this because I thought it was cool, right? It's not, anyway, here it is. I don't know if you can actually see it. It says, make outside fun again. Nice. I don't know if they tried to do that as a trademark, but I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Mosquito Joe, outside is fun again. Right. And then their Mosquito Joe logo. So I thought that was a really great example. And what's another example that I just saw? So I was just in Costco yesterday and I decided that, okay, this is going to make a really good video. It's called, this is a photograph that I took, Pool Pets, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to do a video about why you can't use, why you can't use words that are spelled differently but sound the same as somebody else's trademark, right? So you can't do that. And I'm going to do probably today's video about just that subject. So I get ideas for these things all the time, right? Like the big green egg. You know, I did a case study. People love these case studies, okay? So there's two things that people love. People love trademark wars, okay? They love trademark wars. I call them trademark wars. It's like, you know, Kylie Minogue versus Kylie Jenner, right? They were fighting over the name Kylie, right? So that was trademark wars. That was good for two videos. And they also love case studies. So when I was in Costco, I get my best ideas at Costco. when I was in Costco and I saw a big blue egg. And I thought to myself, huh, that's interesting. I wonder if Big Green Egg has registered a trademark for the color green for barbecues. And I went and I looked, and sure enough, they had, right? So that was a video and it was fun and people love them. So yeah.
Exactly. And you do it in the context then when you're doing your Facebook, whether it's your Facebook Live or you just do the video record and then later put that on your podcast mm-hmm. or on YouTube, whatever, you can still then share that video to Facebook. People are more likely to turn to click on and listen to what you're saying if there's a different kind of background. You know, it's like, where is she? She's on location. I want to know where she is and what she's doing. Mm-hmm. So they're much more likely to click, especially than if it's just a plain white background. So
this is my background. It's hiding my very messy bookshelf behind, right?
No, we get it. So it's like, but consider making it, I mean, don't worry about hiding those things and just start getting into the rhythm of being real with it and being okay with whatever is in the background.
You could always start with, I have a messy bookshelf because I actually read my books. Yeah. I don't act like I read books.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
Because how many of us have like that perfectly neat bookshelf and we're like, we don't touch those books?
It doesn't look like that.
But it's a nice bookshelf, right?
Right. right? Yeah. No, but I think that's a great idea. So I'm going to start doing Facebook Lives whenever I'm out and about. And I can say, you know, here's the Big Green Egg Barbecue that I'm talking about, folks. Yeah. So I just want to tell you that tomorrow's video is going to be about Big Green Egg. And I'm going to check and I'm going to see if they have green registered for their trademark for barbecues. So tune in tomorrow, you know, to my live and I'll talk about that.
Exactly. And then that can be purposed into an article on your blog that links to all those other things. So
That links to all those other things. I guess they probably need to get a plugin to link to like Twitter and all of that.
Well,
it's pretty easy. You can just download a social share plugin. There's a million.
Yeah.
I think like Shareaholic or Buzz.
Oh, Shareaholic. Okay. Yeah. I've seen that before. Shareaholic.
Yeah. And the other part of it is like, so in the article, then you'll link to your, is that what you're talking about? She'll link to her YouTube. She'll link to the podcast, et cetera. Okay.
Yeah. It's easy. Yeah. It's right there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really a good idea. So I can link, maybe I should just put that, thinking about this, I could just put that into the template for the blog articles, right? Like here's my podcast, here's my YouTube channel. That's a brilliant idea. Yeah, I should definitely be linking out. I'm taking notes. I'm learning so much. Thank you so much.
We are so grateful for all that you share with us because we've learned a ton and we've already kept you a lot longer than we promised. And so maybe we can just bring this to a close. We had other ideas for you as well. And my mind just went blank for some reason. It happens, you know, not uncommon for it to happen at the wrong inopportune times, but it'll come back. So if it doesn't come back before we end this session together, then we'll send it and follow up to you in email by email.
Meanwhile, awesome.
If you could share like what are your dreams for your business? Like what are you looking forward to in growing your business in the future?
Well, one of the things I'm really excited about right now is coaching other attorneys. So I have a really great law practice that makes me really happy. And, you know, there's a reason why attorneys have such high rates of suicide and alcoholism and drug abuse.
Wow. I didn't even
know. It's terrible. I mean, being an attorney should be like a health hazard. It is a health hazard. and I'm really, I would say lucky, but lucky isn't the right word because I've really designed my practice so that I love it. Right. And one of the things I'm actually setting up the program right now is to help attorneys monetize their practices so that they can earn passive income instead of just meeting with clients all day and earning money that way, because it can be really hard. Most attorneys don't make very much money. That's kind of the dirty little secret in the profession. The attorneys that work at these big white shoe stuffy law firms, yeah, they make a lot of money, but your average solo or small firm attorney is pretty lucky to make $100,000 a year. It's shocking.
Yeah.
Especially after, you know, investing all that money in a legal education and the stress that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. Right. So
long hours, incredibly long hours as well.
Yeah. Not just the long hours. It's, we see people at their worst. I mean, I'm lucky because I don't really see people at their worst. I don't have a criminal law or family law, practice, but I mean, a lot of attorneys deal with a lot of very stressful, situations and very stressed out clients, you know, who are dealing with like the most stress they've ever gone through ever. Like when you're going through a divorce, pretty stressful, you know, you've been accused of a crime, pretty stressful.
Right.
So, I'm looking forward to coaching attorneys so that they can have their ideal practice too, because I think mine's pretty awesome.
Okay. So in that case, then some of the ideas for your video creation would be different. So as you're starting to create ideas, the ones that we talked about is more for clients and attracting clients.
Yeah.
There will be a whole other kind of genre or category of videos and content that you'll need to create for attracting your attorney clients that you can coach in future. So we'll put our heads together on that and send you some ideas. And
oh my gosh, that would be awesome.
Yeah, begin keeping a list of like the two different, because now you're going to be focusing on two different niches. And, you know, it's definitely doable even with your existing content, because they can see that and you can leverage that. But you'll definitely want to create content specifically for the people you want to attract to coach, to help. And that's a very worthy endeavor. It's, we've been hearing about a lot of entrepreneurs who are also committing suicide when it is that they realize that, you know, that what it is that their life is and what it's become is not what is,
what was sold.
Is not, well, not just what was sold, but it's what, it's not what they presented to their friends from peer pressure that they've got to keep up a certain amount of appearances. So that's one category. Another category are those who have made a lot of wealth from like perhaps less than ethical online kind of marketing schemes kind of thing. And they feel empty from it, you know? So it's like a whole,
people,
you know,
do that. Yeah. People do that. You mean people do that? I'm shocked.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I hear you.
It's been a lot of fun. So we will keep in touch and looking forward to following up with you on your next chapter as well.
And thank you so much for sharing all your advice and wisdom and going down those rabbit holes and making it entertaining. It was all these subjects can sometimes be like so dry and you're like, oh my gosh, we're talking about legal stuff, but it was really entertaining and you're a funny, awesome person.
Yeah.
And thank you. I'm glad that I made it entertaining and perhaps digestible even. So that's my goal, right? That's my goal.
Absolutely. So check out Angela Langlot at trademarkdoctor.net. Talk to you later.
Thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Bye-bye. Bye. You too. Thanks so much for joining us for the I Create Daily podcast. Please let us know what creatives you would like us to interview and what topics you would be interested in hearing more about.
And if you enjoyed this show, please leave a review on iTunes. We value your feedback. We read all the reviews, and it just helps us get the word out on the I Create Daily podcast. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.